With a storied career that has spanned more than six decades, Dan Rather is one of the world's best-known journalists. He will be visiting the University at Albany this Friday, September 6th at 7:30 in the CEFQ Arena on the University at Albany's Uptown campus. He has interviewed every president since Eisenhower and covered almost every important dateline around the world. Dan Rather joined CBS News in 1962. In 1981, he assumed the position of anchor and managing editor of the CBS Evening News, which he held for 24 years. His reporting helped turn 60 Minutes into an institution, launched 48 Hours as a news magazine program, and shaped countless specials and documentaries. Upon leaving CBS, Rather created the Emmy Award-winning Dan Rather Reports on HDNet. He is founder, president, and CEO of News and Guts, an independent production company. And his recent New York Times bestseller, What Unites Us, Reflections on Patriotism, is out in paperback this week. It is a collection of original essays about the world we live in, what our core ideals have been and should be, and what it means to be an American. Again, he will be at SUNY Albany on Friday, September 6th at 7:30, and it's a great honor and a pleasure to welcome Dan Rather to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir.
Thank you, Joe Donahue. A great pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time, and thank you very much. It's going to be a thrill to have you in the region. Give us a sense of what brought you to this point. I mean, I think I can guess, but what brought you to this point of wanting to look at what unites us in such a divisive time of saying, okay, but here are the things that will and can unite us?
Well, I'm pausing here. I guess I'd say the spirit of the times. What prompted me to write this book is that there are so many people in very high places in American politics today who are seeking, and in some ways have been successful, to exploit the divisions in the country. That, you know, we're a new thing in history, we Americans. We're dedicated to both the idea and the ideal that a thoroughly multi-religious, multi-racial, multi-ethnic mix of people can agree on enough core values to hold themselves together. Now, politicians of various persuasions, and they say the higher you go, unfortunately, the worse it's been, have sought to not emphasize what unites us, but for their own partisan, political, and or ideological, or just pure personal power reasons, have sought to exploit the divisions. And I sense that we were in some danger of descending from what I perceive to be genuine patriotism to extreme nationalism, which can lead to tribalism. And if we ever descend completely into tribalism, then we're finished with the United States of America as we know it. So I said to myself, you know, look, I have no illusions of what influence I can have, but let me try to write something that talks about what unites us, that there are core values to the United States, that whatever our differences are, on which overwhelmingly Americans agree, you know, the rule of law, the right of the vote, the right to dissent, the right of a free press, those kind of things. And if we aren't careful, we'll forget about what unites us and succumb to this exploitative technique of high people in high positions emphasizing what divides us.
You say in the book that, I mean, you've seen aspects of this your entire career and your entire life, but you do make a point several times in the book to say that this right now is the worst you personally have ever seen it, which I assume is also what you hear from a lot of people that come up to you, often with tears in their eyes, and say, oh my God, what can we do?
Yes, and what I try to say to people who come up to me that way, and quite a few people do, is, you know, a version of, well, steady. It is a difficult time. I think it can't be denied. This is a perilous time for the country because they are people seeking to divide us. So that have we seen worse? Yes, the Great Civil War, which we killed among ourselves, what, about 700,000 people back in the 1860s, may have been worse. certainly things were difficult in the 1960s when I was growing into adulthood. We had our divisions. But this is a particularly perilous time. And to those same people, when I say steady, we can get through this, but we can't get through it by just wishing and hoping to get through it. We have to get active. And one way we can get active is think to ourselves, well, what is it that unites us as a country? And then try to act on that with what I call, even a quiet version of heroic citizenship. As you mentioned, this What Unites Us is out in paperback now, and what we added, my co-author Ellie Kirsch and I, is a final chapter on the citizenship, and it makes a call for, look, every citizen can be a heroic citizen every day, sometimes in quiet, small ways of, helping a homeless shelter or helping a place where older people are having difficulty or just reaching out and helping someone who's a different color, different religion, different political things, that we can all be our own version of a heroic citizen. I know that will strike some people as maybe kind of corny or sophomoric, but I really feel that way. And it's one reason that I'm eager to talk about even this paperback edition of What Unites Us.
You point out in that afterword that the time certainly have us questioning where we are and what we can do and how we make a difference. And as you say, that heroic citizenship, but it doesn't have to, you point out, involve politics. It can simply being a part of your community. It can simply being an engaged citizen and knowing what is going on around you.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you made that point. All of us every day face a tsunami of tweets, breaking news. Almost all news now, whether it's just a local weather report, is called breaking news. And if we aren't careful, we forget about the sort of basic things. Yes, it's important to be involved politically and to be active politically and to vote and all that. But the little things, I come back to it. Frankly, when somebody asks me, Dan Rather, these are very difficult, perilous times when I feel helpless. What can I do? I say, well, one thing you can do when your feet hit the floor every morning, make it the first thing you think, how can I help somebody else today? And particularly, how can I help, a neighbor who may be of different color, different religion, different political thing? Something as small as that fits my definition of heroic citizenship.
You write in the book, presently, the institution of a free press in America is in a state of crisis greater than I have ever seen in my lifetime and perhaps in any moment in this nation's history. The winds of instability howl from many directions, a sustained attack on press freedom from those in political power, crumbling business models, rapidly changing technologies, and some self-inflicted wounds. This is a test not only for those of us who work in journalism, but also for the nation as a whole. Did you ever think in your lifetime and as a journalist that you would be referred to as an enemy of the people?
No. And I certainly never expected to hear it from the mouth of the President of the United States. This is very dangerous. Most presidents, almost every president, has at one time or another been dissatisfied with the press. In the past, the Nixon administration being one prime example of it, there were efforts to attack individual press institutions, the Washington Post, CBS News, or maybe individual reporters. But to generalize and to call the press as a whole, quote, enemies of the people, is, when you stop and think about it, really should give us pause. This is exactly the kind of language that every dictator, every tin-horn autocrat through history has put forward. And, it is of concern to journalists and those of us in the press, of course, but my point is that it should be, and I think with many people is, of concern to the public at large, because we know this, that a free and independent, fiercely independent when necessary, press is the red beating heart of democracy. If you don't have it, you're not going to have a republic based on the principles of freedom and democracy that we have. Now, in the current environment, in which there's an unrelenting, thought-out, carefully calculated attack to diminish the work of everybody in the press, not just individual, but, you know, the press is, quote, an enemy of the people, unquote, has got to be concern to every citizen.
Certainly, for even prior to this administration, the polls have told us over and over again that the only thing that people like less than Congress or the government is the press. So for this administration to really take those and to sensationalize those sentiments, as you were talking about earlier, what do you believe the journalists and the field of journalism, that model, needs to do to update itself to become more, not that it becomes more essential, but that people understand its importance and those numbers and the trust rises instead of falls?
Well, a very good question. And it's one that needs a serious answer. You know, I'm not, I don't consider myself a particularly serious person. I'm serious about my work, but not about myself. But here's what we journalists need to do. First of all, we need to do our job and do our job as well as we possibly can do it. And particularly with deep digging investigative journalism that exposes corruption in high places, we need to do our job. That's number one. Number two, journalism as a whole needs to find a whole new economic model, that the economic model on which overwhelmingly journalism was based for most of my lifetime has virtually collapsed. And with few exceptions, nobody has come up with a new economic model that will support the kind of deep-digging investigative reporting, first-class international reporting, and so forth that we need. And the third thing is, I think that we in journalism need to work as hard as we can to have people understand what it is we're trying to do. You know, people can make their judgment how well or how poorly we do it, but what is it that we journalists are trying to do? At our best, when we're at our best, what we're trying to do is get to the truth, or as close to the truth as is humanly possible to get. And once we get to that, bear witness, report, stand up, don't back down, don't back away, don't turn around. Get as close as you can to the truth and tell it.
The rap on Dan Rather for a long time has been that he has a liberal bias. And you talk in the book that, you know, my critics will claim the narrative I have laid out is proof of my own liberal bias. It is a charge I have heard for decades. I do not think the bias attack, however, against the American press holds up to scrutiny. How do you believe that is the case? And I guess, how do we get away from that you have, or the press has, liberal bias versus, oh, they're telling us the truth?
Well, the best thing we can do is, and I'll repeat it, is dedicate ourselves to try to do our job better every day.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I'm answering the question both in terms of my own personal case and I think the case for journalism as a whole. And it is a paraphrase of what every football and basketball coach has ever said. You are what your record is. And if anybody stops to examine and doesn't listen to the partisan political attacks and ideological motivated attacks on the press, I'm quite happy to have people look at my record. Have I been perfect? No. Have I made mistakes? Yes. But no reporter who's honest will tell you that they haven't along the way, you know, made mistakes and done things that they know they could have done a whole lot better. But I am what my record is, and there's no sense repeating it all here. But the idea that I have some kind of elite Eastern liberal bias is almost laughable. Look at the record. I'm not playing humble beginnings, but I came from a father who was a basically a manual laborer. I came from a tough, downscale neighborhood, to say the least. I went all through public schools in Texas, for heaven's sakes. Never saw the inside of anything other than public school. Volunteered for the Marine Corps. Had one of the shortest, least distinguished records in the Marine history. But nonetheless, I never saw combat or anything close to it. I submit to you, this is not the background of someone with an elite Eastern liberal bias. But, you know, I stand on my record. Having said, my record is not perfect. But part of this business with me personally is that I consider it good fortune. But I've been on the line for controversial stories, covering Dr. Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement in the early 1960s, the Vietnam War, the whole business with the widespread criminal conspiracy that we use shorthand the term Watergate during the Nixon administration. You can't be on point on stories of that much controversy and have everybody love you. By the way, I'm reminded that my old journalism professor at Sam Houston State Teachers College was fond of saying, if you're in journalism and you want to be loved, you better get a dog. and I've been reminded of that many times. But for me personally, I'm quite happy to have somebody look at my record, flaws, imperfections and all, and I stand on my record. Now, I think the same thing applies to American journalism as a whole. That when, say, the New York Times or the Washington Post goes deep digging investigative reporting and confirms corruption in high places, the people who've been found out about their corruption in high places start screaming liberal bias. You know, I have great confidence in the American public, and I think they recognize it for what it is, and to use as clean a word as I can, they recognize it as pure bull feathers.
The great historian David McCullough once said to me that we have to see this as a difference between right versus left and right versus wrong.
I kind of like that. I agree with that. Those who want to exploit differences in the country for their own partisan, political, or ideological differences always want to say, well, it's right versus left. But time after time, when you talk about policies, it's a question of right versus wrong. And one of the jobs the press performs is to point out when something is dead wrong. Now, a current example would be, not very long ago, I'm sure you noticed the story and your listeners probably noticed the story, that was quietly put into effect by the executive branch of government and the president, a policy of expelling people on visas who had children in hospitals, some of them, the children with very serious diseases. Well, the press exposes. They did quietly, almost secretly, hoping nobody would notice. Well, the press noticed, let the public know, and lo and behold, even as we speak today, I see that the administration is now reversing that policy.
And you hope, obviously, we all hope as we read that, that it's for the long term and not short term. But even still, it does show, and I think you would, I believe this to be the case, many of us look at the journalism that is being done. You gave two examples of the Washington Post, the New York Times, but also in these perilous times, we're seeing some of the best journalism we've ever seen.
We are. And not just, by the way, I mentioned the New York Times and the Washington Post because they have broad and deep resources, thank heaven. But, you know, day in and day out, they are local journalists at every level. Even in my wife's small hometown of Smithville, Texas, and places like Albany, you know, bigger city, but certainly not New York, Chicago. They are workaday reporters every day trying to dig in and knock on doors, do the things necessary, say what's going on in there, and expose wrongs that are being done. Sometimes it's corruption. Sometimes it's just a wrong policy, such as the one we were just discussing. But I want to emphasize that we talked earlier about what's happening in American journalism, that, you know, local newspapers by the by the dozens are disappearing. And this limits the amount of local reporting, which I've tried to praise here, because, you know, among my heroes are those small and medium-sized newspaper reporters and television reporters who don't make a lot of money, don't have a lot of protection, but are out there every day with some guts trying to dig deep into corruption, that my admiration for them knows no bounds.
Well, and when it comes to heroes, you certainly are at the very top of my list, personally. You are one of the finest broadcast journalists I've ever seen. I grew up watching you and tried to emulate you as much as I possibly can. The one thing that has always impressed me about your work is that there were days where maybe the story was not the sexiest thing to lead with, but you led with it because it was important and it was something that we should know about. So I ask you, as someone who was a great mentor to me, are we going to be okay?
Yes. Let me pause and say I appreciate the compliments, and not sure I deserve them, but appreciate it. But the answer to your question is yes. We're going to be okay if each and every one of us dedicates ourselves to trying to practice heroic citizenship, even in the smallest ways. We're going to be okay. I'm an optimist by nature and by experience. If we hold ourselves steady, if we emphasize our core values, what unites us, and if we don't get thrown off by people who try to exploit our divisions, we're going to be okay. I agree, this is a very perilous time for the country, and we may yet have to go through a long, dark valley. But if we just emphasize those things that unite us, those values on which we all agree, and we don't get thrown off, we just hold steady, keep putting one foot in front of the other, we're going to be okay.
Dan Rather will visit the University at Albany this Friday, September 6th at 7:30 in the CEFQ Arena at the University at Albany's Uptown Campus. The event is a preview for the Writers Institute's second Albany Book Festival, which will take place the following week. Tickets are free. You can find out more by going to albany.edu for more information. The new book is just out in paperback, What Unites Us? Reflections on Patriotism. It is published by Algonquin. Dan Rather, a great privilege and an honor to speak to you. I thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you on Friday.
Thank you very, very much.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Dan Rather at SUNY Albany on Friday night at 7:30. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.